Chardonnay. A little different style Chardonnay than the California. We almost call it like a French white Burgundy. It's an old style Chardonnay. So we've fermented it in stainless. We put it over an oak and we fermented it again. The second fermentation will give you the nice mellow pear flavors. It'll also give you the buttery finish on it. It's a
This is actually the sixth year that we're hosting the Indiana Wine Fair. It started off small, and every year it's doubled in size, which is making it rather daunting as a planning perspective if you continue that growth spurt. But the Indiana Wine Fair is really an effort to promote Indiana vintners, and there's 30, 35 of them now. And some of them are making some really excellent wines. It's a well-kept secret that we have some great wineries in this state. And we invited them to come into the Story Inn, pour their wines to an appreciative public, and just see who shows up. And word caught on pretty fast.
A lot of these wines, but you know, you take this wine's been in the bottle, so as you pour it, then you swirl it around, open it up to get the bouquet of the wine.
Rick Hofstetter is the owner of the Story Inn.
I bought the Story Inn in, it was the spring of 99. And I had a partner at the time that was quite experienced in the restaurant industry. And I ended up liking it more than practicing law and ended up buying his share of the company a few years ago.
Alan Dale, or Ole Olson, is the resident wine expert at the Story Inn, where he's known as the Pontiff of Palate. A self-described wine missionary, Olson once earned a Master of Wine certificate as Grand Champion with the Knights of St. Stephen in Alsace. He explained the roots of his passion for wine.
I guess it's because I grew up as a young child under the years of Prohibition and the Great Depression in Indiana. No, that's not true. It happened really as a GI at the end of the war, drafted, sent to Germany, where Germans loved to do things for us, and they taught us there were things other than 3.5 beer and began treating us to some delicious wines, and I was hooked. That's really where it started, way, way back at the end of World War II, a GI in Germany, sampling wine for the first time.
And you've managed to quaff a few
it
bottles
gets,
since
It gets
then.
Easier all the time.
So the big question is, Indiana and wine, who knew that such a thing could occur? Obviously, we know wine can be made, grapes can be grown all across the country, and we have some established industries in different parts of our country. But what is it about Indiana that allows this to happen here?
You ask who knew. Thomas Jefferson knew. That's who knew.
In Virginia, of course.
But he knew about Indiana. A man named Jean-Jacques Dufour, a Swiss immigrant, settled in Vivi, took the name of Vivi, a town in Switzerland where he came from, and he started playing around with the Alexander grape. And he had some success with it, but Thomas Jefferson actually heard about Dufour and what he was doing, and so did Henry Clay. And there's correspondence on record showing that they wrote back and forth about each other. The Alexander grape didn't do well, finally, as most grapes brought from Europe didn't do well. He couldn't deal with the insects and the mold and the very, very humid summers. So the Alexander grape, probably a good thing, has all but disappeared. You don't hear much about it anymore. But Indiana had the first commercial winery in the United States, down there near Vivi. And during the early part of the 19th century, that area was called the American Rhineland. So you could say commercial wine producing actually started here in Indiana.
Are there other parts of the state that are particularly conducive?
Well, there are vineyards in both north and south, not so many right in the center. But what we have here in Indiana that is useful to grape production is not so much the soils. They're not terribly different from soils anywhere else in the Midwest or even further afield. But we have the Great Lakes, which causes an interesting weather phenomenon. The cold air coming down from the north is somewhat warmed by the Great Lakes, which means we in Indiana don't get all those severe, big, heavy winter storms you get in Nebraska, Kansas, and the Great Prairie states. Plus, the great glaciers of millions of years ago pushed what today is Lake Michigan, which back then was called Stony Island, just pushed all the stones down here into southern Indiana, and we have nice slopes of hard stones, granite, limestone, that provides good drainage, a lot of gravel, plus the Ohio River, which has a kind of cooling effect coming from the south. So we're blessed with two bodies of water that impact on the grapes in Indiana. And don't forget, the great grapes of the world come from riverbanks, the Rhine, the Rhone, the Loire, the Po, the Ebro. You know, why not the Ohio?
French winemakers wax poetic about the terroir or the soil and the minerals in it. Is there anything about that beautiful vein of limestone that we have here in Indiana that contributes to...
Makes it alkaline.
There must be. You know, we call the French primarily, but Europeans generally, the old world producers, terroirists, because they love the terroir, the soil. I know a man in Burgundy who can taste a wine and tell you precisely which vineyard it comes from. I know a wine steward in Cincinnati who can taste almost any wine and tell you what grape varieties are in that bottle. He might even tell you the region. But this is an ongoing subject right now, particularly in the United States and increasingly in Europe, trying to keep in touch with the American market. The old world people love their regions. A German wants his Rhine wine to taste like a Rhine wine. He wants his Mosel to taste like a Mosel. No Burgundian would ever try to plant Bordeaux, Cabernet Sauvignon in Burgundy, and they're very proud of that. It's something they actually have laws about, and they regulate the grapes that can be grown in a given area. And that's grown out of hundreds of years of evolution and generations of experience. Here in the New World, we're a little impatient, as you know, and we don't care where it comes from as long as it tastes good and it tastes like a Pinot Noir. If I want a Pinot Noir, by God, I want it to taste like a Pinot Noir or a Cabernet and its blends, and we don't care if it's California, Indiana, and even the purists like the people from Sideways, they want their Pinot Noir from wherever. But they don't care if you also grow Gamay and Sangiovese and Merlot out there in the same vineyards. Just let me have my Pinot Noir and make it taste good. Couldn't happen in Europe.
Thank you. So what are we trying first?
Sangiovese.
And that's
our bold Tuscan wine. So it's a style grape. It's an Italian grape. We've had it for 14 months in oak. This will be a very peppery style wine. Very bold. It's going to have tannins. It's going to hang on the tongue for a while.
Okay.
If you're a bold red wine drinker, that's going to do it for you.
That pairs well with food, doesn't it?
It does, very well.
Yeah, delicious. And so 14 months in oak?
French oak. Yeah. 14 months in French oak. So really, we almost had this wine for 2 years before we put it in the bottle.
You've signaled certain wines to look out for as far as what Indiana is producing. Certain grapes do particularly well here. What are some of those?
Well, they're all hybrids from French clones to begin with. All of the wineries here in Indiana experiment somewhat with the classic grape varieties, the Cabernets, the Pinots, and the Cabernet Francs, and so on. They don't compete well with our climactic and insect conditions. So there are hybrids that have come off. So we look for Chardonnay, for example, which is an offshoot from Chardonnay. We look for Chambersin, which is kind of a Pinot Noir blend. And then there's the Sauval Blanc and grapes like that. And they do very well here.
How are these wines doing outside of the state? Have they garnered a reputation at all? Or?
Well, you know, we've got some pretty backward laws in the state. It's not conducive to this very noble agricultural product. We seem to be stuck on growing corn and soybeans.
It's hard for Indiana producers to let their wines be known outside Indiana because our law makes it complicated for them to ship outside the state. To simplify it, the consumer buys from a retail store. The retailer buys from the wholesaler. The wholesaler selects the wines that he will put on offer to the retailers. And the retailers select from the wholesalers. What that really means, Al, I love this statistic. It means that only about 5% of all the wine produced in the United States is available to us in Indiana. Shocking, isn't it? 95% of all the wines produced in the United States are not available to us consumers in Indiana.
You know, it stunts the market from a variety of ways. And we do have now a wonderful method of, and very efficient method, of selling small quantities of wine. It's called the internet. And, you know, it wasn't around when they passed the three-tier law back in 1933. So ultimately, we are turning our backs on the most efficient method of distribution of this product, which would allow a consumer or a retailer like me to get online, find out what other people have written about a wine, order it directly. For me as a retailer to resell it, or for Ole as a consumer to simply buy it, bring it home, and have it with dinner. Can't do that, by and large, in this state. And a lot of states know that, and they do not grant Indiana reciprocity. So in other words, they will shut out Indiana wineries from selling in California, for example, on, you know, the most favorable nation basis. What we have is really a vestige of prohibition, and these old laws really need to go away. It's time.
Are there other states that are suffering from the same kinds of legal hurdles?
All 50 of the states were suffering from these legal hurdles until very recently. Now some 35 of them have modified the three-tier system. Most of the remaining states have activists attempting to get ours modified. And I think ultimately it's going to happen. I just hope so. It happens in my lifetime.
Well, I just hope Indiana doesn't have the onerous distinction of being the last of 50 states to drop this ridiculous law.
I'm ready for a big glass of wine.
The culture seeks out wineries. It's fun. Or like you guys, just take off on some Saturday when you're on vacation. You'll stop visiting wineries.
I would like to say this about Indiana wineries, though. I think there are close to 40. Together, they attract about 1 million visitors a year. Their total income to the state is about $10 million in tourism dollars, plus their sales every year, which is significant. And another good thing about our Indiana wineries is you can't outsource them. I mean, you're not going to see Bill Oliver say, well, it's getting too expensive here in Indiana. I'm going to move my operation to Mexico. You know, that's not going to happen.
Wine has become our favorite beverage in this country. We now drink more wine than beer. And it has become almost a necessary accoutrement to good food. Now, we started years ago, just a few years ago at Story, doing wine dinners. And people really learn very quickly. And they learn what they like. And what's so nice about wine tasting is that there's no good or bad in an absolute sense. It's what you like. And people have different opinions. It's just like you have a different opinion about rock music or jazz. It's just what pleases your ear. So what the wine does is it provides you with a complexity, a dimension to the enjoyment of food, and people are learning really fast that this is a key part of a dining experience. Slow down. Don't try to drink this at the at the drive-thru. Enjoy your meal. And it's a wonderful experience.
It's a lot of fun.
We enjoyed it. What? We liked the opportunity to sample all the different wineries that are down here.
And what was your favorite of the wines you tried today?
I'm a Chardonnay guy, so I like the Chardonnays. I picked one over here from Turtle Run Winery. It's called Chard. It was just Chard. Mm-hmm. The Chard from Turtle Run. It was very good.
Is that an oaky Chard, or is that a more of a minerally kind of French Chardonnay? Or? No? It tastes good, right?
It tastes good.
Coffee in the morning and wine in the evening, and everything else is boring, boring.
For WFIU's Artworks, I'm Yael Cassander.